Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. This week we spoke with voice actor Rob Paulsen, who was diagnosed with stage 3 metastatic squamous cell carcinoma in 2016 after discovering a lump on his neck. Known for his roles on animated series like Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Paulsen has made a living with his voice for more than 3 decades. But he wasn't about to let throat cancer stop him from bringing happiness to people of all ages with his portrayal of characters like Yakko, Pinky, and Donatello. Now cancer-free, Paulsen is stepping into a new role as the 2020 Head and Neck Cancer Alliance celebrity spokesperson with the same enthusiasm that has made him a voice acting legend in his own time. He plans to raise awareness about the disease by sharing how his experience has helped him find a reason to smile, even when times get tough.
You were diagnosed with stage 3 throat cancer in 2016. So how did you come to be diagnosed? Were there signs or symptoms you experienced before that?
There were. I didn't realize they were signs or symptoms. I had a lump on the left side of my neck, which was pretty prevalent. Well, not prevalent. What's the word? That was noticeable to the touch. Oh, probably for 6 months. Other than that, no overt symptoms. I had no problem doing my job, no trouble swallowing, eating. I did have a noticeable lump, which I guess got a little bit more prevalent. But I'd had it. It was relative from what I was told, and from what many of your listeners will know, is it is a relatively slow progressing cancer, although in my case, the lump indicated that it had already spread from the primary tumor, which I had no idea was there. So like most guys, I don't pay attention to most health issues unless I'm unable to walk or I can't eat for a week or something like that. Former athlete, you know, all that stuff. And so you go, oh, well, it's probably a low-grade infection, blah, blah, blah. I did not mention it to my wife. Had I done that, she probably would have said, well, go and get a check, or you're kind of stupid if you don't. And she would have been right. But it didn't bother me. And so I just let it wait until it was time for my yearly physical. And I told my internist, what do you think about this? And I promise you, Jessica, 5 seconds. He said, oh, I don't think that's good. And I thought he was messing with me. And he said, nah, this is a knot. It's more than likely a lymph node, but it's really hard. It's not a soft mass that would have indicated possibly a low-grade infection or something like that. No fever. And so he said, I want you to see an ENT yesterday. And it didn't take long. The ENT, when he palpated it, kind of humored me and said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll give you some antibiotics, give it 10 days. And if it starts to dissipate, then yeah, it would have been an infection. And I kind of pressed him and said, what do you think? And he goes, well, do you really want me to tell you? I think it's probably cancer, but we'll give it a shot. So I put on my typical best face, and my wife and I kind of kept looking at each other going, I can't believe this is cancer, because I don't feel like what you're supposed to, feel like, whatever. And the diagnosis had not been confirmed. So I went back 10 days later and said, I think it's getting smaller. And he kind of chuckled. He said, no, it isn't. So a few biopsies later, it was discovered that it was, in fact, stage 3 metastatic squamous cell carcinoma with occult primary, which, as I indicated earlier, means that they couldn't find the primary. But after a series of puncture biopsies in my throat, they found it at the base of my tongue. And so that was the diagnosis, and the treatment began about 2 weeks after the diagnosis. It was quite amazing how quickly the team assembled, and I think you probably hear from a lot of cancer patients is literally within like a day, or rather a day of interviewing people, there were 4 or 5 physicians who were on my team and continue to be. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So that's how it came about.
Wow. So, and I mean, you make your living with your voice. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's talk about a blow. What was it like hearing those words? I mean, when it, you know, confirmed you have throat cancer.
Yeah. And in fact, I remember calling, my ENT called from Cedars, and he said, how are you feeling? And I said, I don't know. How am I feeling? And he said, well, it's cancer, like, you know, essentially like I thought. And I have to tell you that it was more of a, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit gobsmacked, but neither I nor my wife flipped out. Neither of us said, oh, my God, why me? Or I make my living with my boys. I think my wife is a breast cancer survivor from 20 years ago. And the response was more like, well, that's kind of surprising. And then when things settled down, well, why not us? You know, it's cancer is an equal opportunity offender. You know, it doesn't distinguish between people who deserve it and don't deserve it, quote unquote. And also, I'd had an experience, gosh, I don't even know how many times, Jessica, in which I had had the incredible gift of speaking with parents and their children, many of whom had cancer, not my particular type, but cancer or other ailments that would make it clear to them at the beginning that their children weren't going to make it to sometimes 7 or 8 or 15 or 20. And once things settled in, and I kind of got my bearings, it was a remarkable contextualizer in terms of what is bad news.
So you did touch on this a little bit, but those treatments that you went through, they can be very taxing.
Very.
Yeah. What was it like going through them?
It was, in short, certainly the most difficult physical thing I've ever gone through. You know, it's interesting, like, it's pretty difficult not to get on the internet, of course, once you hear about stuff like that. And I remember the oncologist saying, okay, it's stage 3, and that is because it is spread to your lymph node. However, understand that staging cancers is unique to all types of cancer. So we know that you're going to go home and jump on the internet. We encourage you to learn what you can and have any question. Nobody ever had a question that they said, don't worry about it, rolled their eyes. It wasn't, you know. But when you see stage 3 cancer and it with respect to liver or pancreatic, and you say, you know, oh my gosh, the survival rate is very low. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a specific, you know, area, which is quite curable. The treatment is brutal, and we're not going to sugarcoat it. And it was. It wasn't right away because, as you know, the deleterious side effects of the radiation are cumulative. And I was told that right away, too, because I had my little methods by which I would sort of check off a calendar because I had 7 weeks of daily radiation to my head and neck. And I developed because, you know, as your listeners may know or they will know, there's a vacuum-formed mask that is created to keep your head very stable. So for obvious reasons, you don't want to sneeze and have the radiation oncologist say, oops, you know, they're zapping your throat with some pretty gnarly stuff. And so they got to keep it steady. And so it doesn't hurt. I am not claustrophobic. It's not uncomfortable physically. It's emotionally a little bit taxing. But I would develop certain sounds that I heard that the radiation gantry was making. And when I heard a particular click and buzz, I knew that I had 5 minutes left. And that was developed after the first week or so. And so it was interesting. I remember telling myself, you know what, you're going to hear this click buzz sound and you're going to hear it ultimately on the day that will be your last radiation day. And you will know that it is your last treatment. And I started chatting with the doctors about my little, calendar thing that I'd X out on the refrigerator at home. I didn't really notice anything going on. I was on, you know, that they said it's not real obvious. We're going to make sure that you put cream on your neck and face because you will start to get burned from the radiation as much as we try to mitigate that. You're going to start to get dry mouth. You will have trouble swallowing. And as much as we like the fact that you are celebrating the end or will celebrate the end of your radiation, please understand that in some ways the worst is yet to come because of the cumulative effects. So when I got to about week 5, it started getting pretty intense. And then all the negative stuff really hit the fan for about a month and a half or so afterward. And that's where I really went. I went down pretty quick. I had also 8 concurrent chemotherapy treatments. Those were quicker to be uncomfortable, not during the treatment, but I learned about 48 hours afterwards. In fact, after the first one, I think my My wife was out of town for the first one, and I was very determined to do as much of it as I could by myself, because I think I just wanted to show myself that I could do it.
Yeah.
And I was told that my wife and people who cared about me would be called upon later, so I wanted to give them as much room to see that I was going to be okay as long as I could, because I would need them later. And so I remember saying, you know, this, yeah, it's kind of weird sitting in the chair and being around everybody else, but I am, you know, I've got a pretty positive attitude, and I have a tendency to joke about things, and the people I was around were willing to do the same. But 48 hours later is when the first chemo treatment got my attention. And, you know, with some nausea and food and tasting weird and the metallic taste in my mouth, all of that stuff. So that was an unpleasant side effect, but was gone. After about 3 or 4 days, the side effect of the chemo was gone, but the cumulative effect of the radiation was tough. Then I couldn't, started getting a lot of mouth sores, could not swallow, couldn't eat. So yeah, it became very difficult. And again, they said, at first I thought they were just saying it to kind of, you know, bolster me and say, well, you're a tough guy, you know, it's going to be tough, but you can handle it. They were very clear in saying, no, this is really tough. And I've come to learn that it is. It's not hyperbole. They, for the treatment for head and neck, mouth, throat is very tough for the obvious reason that you can't drink, can't eat, can't swallow, often can't speak. And, it has its, it takes its toll on your body. I lost 50 pounds, which I didn't have to lose. I might have had 10. That all has to be said with the reminder that I was told, and the folks here at the Head and Neck Cancer Alliance, you know, encourage me to let people know that what we're talking about is curative treatment. The short-term discomfort is really difficult. It really is. And it is life-changing, to be sure, for anyone who goes through any kind of cancer, myself included. But we're talking about a cure. So I think that mitigates the suffering somewhat, or at least it did in my account, to say, yeah, this sucks. It sucks really hard, but it's gonna cure you. And it did.
Yeah. So now, you did touch on this a little bit earlier, but I want to talk a little bit more about the time that you spent visiting children's hospitals. You've brought characters like Yakko and Pinky to them, and you've talked, you know, a lot in previous interviews even about how, you know, you help them through their journeys, and now you find in going through your own journey that they help you. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing that up. I wrote a book. Well, I didn't write it. My friend Mike Fleeman wrote it. He did all the heavy lifting. But Mike and I wrote a book called Voice Lessons. We just out last couple of months, a few months. And the book is essentially about exactly what you suggested, the way in which these characters that have brought my family and me a nice living, but also immeasurable joy to me and to millions of others, helped me in my time in the cancer cage, because I got to see. You know, listen to this, folks. You folks are listening to the two of us right now. As soon as I start doing this, I know what Jessica's going to start doing. She's going to start doing what she's doing right now. She's laughing.
Yep.
And my suspicion is that the laughter that you're experiencing is coupled with, like, this difficult to put a finger on feeling that you get. Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God, that's yep. Yakko. That's wild.
Yep.
And I remember this and that or that. And mm-hmm. It's astonishing. And I got to see that firsthand. And there's a young fella in the book whom we use as our poster child. And I say that with a little bit of a chuckle, because he really was in real life a poster child. He was a young fella who had muscular dystrophy, who was the first person I had an interaction with, he and his family, in which I got to see the power of these characters. In his case, it was Raphael. He was a little Ninja Turtle freak, and the same age as my son. He's since passed away, but to see how Ninja Turtles got sweet little Chad, and God bless her, his sister, Mandy, who also had Duchenne muscular dystrophy, because as you know, it's often a genetic predisposition. So this sweet family had two children with muscular dystrophy. But in my case, it was Chad who was the turtle nut. And I kept in touch with his family for many years. And his mother would give me updates about how Chad was responding to treatment and what it meant to him. The Ninja Turtles was with him. When I met him, he was in his Ninja Turtle pajamas. His wheelchair was covered with Ninja Turtle stickers. The same thing, God forbid, would have happened if it had been my son. My son was a Ninja Turtle freak, too. But I got to see and understand from a parent's perspective how deeply these characters connect with people on a level that I never knew. It's a paycheck. Now, don't get me wrong. I love my job and I have a blast doing it. But it's not like people walk up to me and say, oh, my God, you're Yakko. It's changing a lot more because of the nature of things like this and social media. But I'm learning, or rather, I learned then how much people would connect. And then I'd go on about my life and keep in touch and get a phone call. Oh, there's another little boy that wants to talk to Raphael. Oh, there's a little girl who just loves Pinky. You know, and we all do it. We, all of us. It's not just unique to me. But not until I was in my own position with a life-threatening, career-ending possible diagnosis did I really understand the power of joy and what a profile in courage was all about. That I had had all these teachers through these characters who essentially, even after they were gone, helped me get through my stuff. And it is nothing short of astonishing. It still is to me. When I talk about it, it's with a sense of awe that these parents would say, yeah, you just need to remember what Pinky meant to Julianne. And she's gone. She ultimately died of her glioblastoma. But my God, the number of times she played back that chat she had with you on Skype because she wanted to talk to Pinky again. So you just need to know how powerful that is, Rob. We're praying for. Are you kidding me? And that was a huge awakening. So it gave the work and the opportunity I have now a much, 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 much bigger reason for existing. And it's way bigger than a paycheck, my friend. It's way bigger than an action figure. Yeah. And I am an incredibly grateful recipient of all of that information. It's just, it's mind-blowing. It is never not overwhelming to me.
That's great. So now, how are you now? I mean, do you live with any lasting effects of the cancer or its treatments?
Well, I'm good. I mean, I'm actually in one of my I can't taste food periods right now. There was a period where I literally couldn't taste food for, maybe a year. I don't know. I mean, not taste it at all. I was told it would come back, and it has in spurts, but I'm always told we think. And I get that. I can't expect anybody to say, what they can tell me is you're cured. Based on all the quantifiable data, it's gone. Okay. But when they say to me, if I go back and say, my saliva glands don't seem to work, they're obliterated, or at least half of them are. So I have water every time I eat anything but that isn't a soup. So that, I still have a trouble with a bit of exhaustion, those side effects, I have a very understanding wife who just says, rest, lay down, sleep. I learned that Rob 2.0 is different, and I've embraced that. It took me a while to understand that. Sometimes I still have to be reminded that I'm just different. But I'll tell you what isn't different is my sense of gratitude and my desire to share the information, because I had a lot of people share it with me. And it turns out that my ability to laugh and be positive and find the humor in a dark situation was, for me, a big deal. It may not work for everyone, but for me, humor is a big part of the equation. And I whatever side effects are left, the trade has been worth it.
Yeah, and it ties in with the work that you're doing as now you're the new spokesperson for the Head and Neck Cancer Alliance.
Yes, so, how about that?
Yeah, that's fantastic. What does that role actually entail for you?
Well, basically just this. They sought me out. They were very kind and said, would you be interested? And I couldn't say yes fast enough. It's about shedding light on it, knowing that there are going to be over 500,000 cases diagnosed this year alone. The HPV version of this cancer, sadly, is quite ubiquitous. But, huge but, it is curable. And I'm here to talk about it.
That's fantastic. So then basically kind of how we like to wrap up all of our podcasts, we kind of shine the light back on the audience. And so
yes.
What advice would you give to someone who's recently received their own cancer diagnosis?
The advice that I would give to someone who has just been diagnosed is don't be afraid to embrace anyone around you who wants to help. I wanted to be strong. I knew there would be a point at which I couldn't do it anymore for a while. That's how I wanted to move through it. By the same token, if there's somebody who says, honey, I really want to drive you to your radiation treatments, don't push them out. If somebody wants to help you and you realize that it could help you both, if that makes sense. In other words, I had people who respected me doing it the way I wanted to do it. But if somebody says, God, I love you so much, Jessica, please let me take you. It will mean a lot to me if I can take you to your treatments. Let them. It really is about sharing the burden. If you don't have someone in your life who is able or willing to hold your hand literally and go through it with you, then man, what I can tell you to a man or a woman is that laughter is the best medicine. And the cool thing is you can't OD and the refills are free. If you can find a way to laugh about anything, about how many times you've hiccuped today because all of a sudden the radiation has tickled your vagus nerve and you call your oncologist at 2 o'clock in the morning and saying, I've been hiccuping for 2 hours and I'm worried I'm going to break a rib. You got to find a way to find the humor in circumstances, whatever it is, whether it's movies, music, watching comedy, anything that brings you joy and makes you smile. Again, doesn't have to, in my case, it's humor. Music is also, because I'm a singer, it was a huge part of my recovery. But it turns out, Jessica, that if you look for it, and I'm living proof of it, in my case, it was in the guise of some of these children who passed away and now their parents, and a vicarious help through these wacky cartoon characters. You know, friends, folks listening may want to watch Pinky and the Brain or Animaniacs or Jimmy Neutron or Ninja Turtles or Rick and Morty or the things I work on all the time. Mm-hmm. You'll get a vicarious sense of joy through all that stuff. And it turns out that inspiration and help and joy, just like love, come from the most unexpected places, often in the times we need to have them the most. And the trick is being available to them and being willing to look for them. And I promise you, even though it's no, you know, even though Yakko can't hold your hand, I can talk to you from the water tower and sing a couple of songs. Well, Pinky can say, "Hey, God, you're going to make it." That could be the inspiration. So just look for it and accept it, and know that there are resources, and we got you.
Thanks, Rob, for sharing your story and helping others find joy when they need it most. The Cure Talks Cancer Podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com, find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine, or Facebook at @curemagazine.